Welcome to Seize the GM. I'm your host, Zendad.
I'm your co-host, Jules.
And I'm Null Operations.
Have you ever had a great idea for a campaign? Do you have a bunch of friends who want to play an RPG but have no one to run it?
Do you want to see what the world is like behind the GM screen instead of in front of it? Well, we're here to help you do just that.
Each week, the three of us will be discussing various GMing topics. Terminology, maps, atmosphere, world building, you name it. So sit back and relax, and let us help you improve your art of GMing, one show at a time.
Banter, banter, banter. And we are entering the banter segment.
Hello! So, guys, I know it's been a kind of crazy time between everything, but I've had some technical issues with recording equipment, as is prone to happen when you have lost a computer and tried to find new ways to do things. So,
we know what happened. We know the truth.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
The robots from the sci-fi settings are upset that we're not talking about enough sci-fi, and they've lashed out.
It's very possible.
No. That's a little too easy. No, for you, Zendad, no, it's something much more nefarious. Pretty much what happened is Skynet, you know, became self-aware inside your computer, looked at the world, saw what it was, and committed suicide.
That is distinctly possible, but then it made my recording setup, because of the mic that I was using, it was horrible and causing all these weird feedbacking effects between what was recording from you guys going through and re-recorded.
Everything sucks.
I'm making it suck for everyone else. You know?
Actually, sorry, my bad. That was me. I threw a rave the other night.
God.
Light switch.
Light switch rave. Woo!
Click.
Yeah.
God.
Never again will you hear that, folks.
So, as far as I'm going with that joke.
Yeah.
Yep.
Well, so, it's been kind of crazy. So, what have you guys been up to lately?
Jules, you first.
Why me, dude? I'm not interesting.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Let's see. Playing a little bit of video games, not as much as I want to, but some. You know, such is the way. And...
It's safe to say none of us have Mass Effect Andromeda. I'm sorry if you've come here for a review of it.
No, why the...
No, you will never get a review of that from me.
Oh, not me either. Mass Effect, well, it's... Mass Effect's cool, but no.
Wait. Let me read the groundwork here. We can appreciate that BioWare makes good games. We're just not fans.
I've never played it, of them.
It's fun. Except it's kind of interesting, but it's not like, I want to say, like, completely kicking me in the face kind of a thing. You know, it's certain games, yes, it will take time off of work. When Supergiant Games Pyre comes out, yeah. I will be taking time off, but me, what the heck have I been? Oh, yeah, cleaning. It's kind of the what we're setting up because you, Zendad, we got my husband to join in jolly cooperation for our Hidden Grid game.
Yay.
And so I have to move my recording equipment once a week downstairs. So, yeah. And on a little bit of a sad side, it's progressed to the point where now I it sucks, but I can't play piano anymore. I no longer have the fine muscle control to be able to do it, which sucks.
Yeah.
But on the positive side, I'm really happy. I found one of my extension cords.
Ooh.
Yay! So it's not quite as big of a nightmare attempting to set all the recording equipment. His mic, my mic, you know, into the mixer and all that good stuff.
Yeah.
New Patreon goal. If we get enough money, we're going to buy Jules a giant piano from Big.
So she can just hop around.
No, that's the problem is not just that, but my clumsiness. Oh, God. I actually tripped into the pantry.
I do that. Yeah. That's not fun.
But I didn't trip over anything, and I just fell in, head-butted the thing of pasta. So I grabbed the box. I'm like, I'll put it back, and hand spaz and little rope, little like farfalle, the bow tie pasta all over the floor.
Oh no.
I like farfalle. It's like one of the best stuff for mac and cheese, dudes. I will tell you that.
Yeah.
At least the floor is now well dressed.
Yeah, I'm expecting the tiles to go up, you know, do Michigan J Frog. Hello, my baby. Hello, my honey. But
this is a musical episode.
It is. This is awesome. It's completely different from the norm.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to get weird, guys. I warn you all in advance. If you fear weirdness, turn away. Close your eyes.
No. Don't do any of those things. Embrace the change.
Not everyone can embrace the weird, you know, and you know who you are out there.
Right.
All right. But what about you two? How's the writing coming along, buddy?
Oh, I finished the book today.
You've been sitting this for an hour.
You didn't tell us, you monster.
Yeah. Oh, man.
I finished the end right around about 6 o'clock tonight.
Congratulations.
Thank you. It weighed in at like around 124,000 words.
All right, you're going to have to get the full accurate word count. And then we're going to have like, I don't know, that'll be like your player score or something like that.
Yeah.
You know, X, it's like WPB, words per book.
Oh, jeez.
Think about it, you know, it's like everyone has like the sports stats, you have all the, you know, and we got here with 25,363 WPB, dun, dun, dun. I think that'd be kind of funny.
That would be hilarious.
Yeah, true, we need to come up with our own kind of weird gamer stats.
But not necessarily every book needs to have the same word count. It all depends on the story that needs to get.
Right now, that's your average.
Fair enough.
Yeah. You know, yeah, AWPB, average words per book.
Yeah.
You know, you come on, pitchers, they have, you know, and you know, baseball players, they have RBI, you know.
Yeah, but RBIs are unique. Those are literal, a certain number.
I know, but it's the, you know, acronym thingy.
Yeah, totally. For stats. Fair enough.
Adding average, you know, all that cool stuff.
Yeah.
I think it'd be...
I can't believe you finished it and you didn't say anything until now.
I wanted to wait till we were alive.
God, that's amazing. I'm so glad you got it done, man.
Dude.
And the nice thing is I decided not to do the cliche thing of the main villain dies and gets back up in like a page or two.
Now, if an evil sorcerer reanimated the dead villain, that'd be different.
You know, when you read the book, you might not think that's possible.
Ooh.
True. True. I mean, it's your story. I mean, rock it out, man. But now, for me, just at the end, have the necromancer raise him up one more time just so they can punch him in the nuts and they're like, okay, now you're dead.
Well, right. Don't worry. I finished up the epilogue, and yeah, the epilogue definitely sets up that there could be more.
Oh, just cool.
That particular guy.
I like it. That's going to be sweet.
Yeah.
Awesome.
That's like the bestest news, dude.
Yeah. Oh, well.
I know you can't top that, but you probably got some cool stuff under your hat there, buddy. What'd you got?
Well, I started running for Hidden Grid. And that, I love... love the setting for Shadowrun. I really do, and I'm horrible with rules.
I don't wait. Hey, look, you know, hubby found some really weird stuff. Remember the thing he found in the editing where he was asking about the a body change power?
Oh, yeah.
That was ridiculous.
Yeah, that's an editing issue on their end, and that's fine. But I feel that some things are just, the setting is what makes them. And yeah. Shadowrun is one of those where the setting is so much more than the rules that are kind of tacked on.
Whoa. Are we Die by the Die all of a sudden?
No, but
I feel like we're Die by the Die all of a sudden. We're complaining about Shadowrun's rules, but we really love Shadowrun's setting. I'm having flashbacks here. 10 years
I have always been this way.
You know, I like Cyberpunk. You know, Cyberpunk 2020, Shadowrun, you name it. The thing is, though, certain mechanics enhance a story. Certain mechanics just, you know, in game mechanics just, Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It gets a little wonky. Some of them are just tools. Some of them are tools. Some of them, you know, like Deadlands. Deadlands, the game mechanics, yeah. They actually kind of help build the story because you're still dealing with poker chips and decks of cards. And,
right.
You know, yeah. And, you know, it's little things like that. But
so.
Yeah, man, you're damn good. And you really poor Opti. poor Opti.
Oh, now I'm looking forward to hearing the recording.
Oh, yeah.
This actually will be probably one of the first sessions I was not there for.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it was, actually.
You proved you're human. You're not a cyborg.
So, yeah. But
the camouflage worked.
The reason I bring up the fact that I started running this is because I know that I run a very different game than the others, and that's okay. But I wanted to, let people see a different way of running this game. And so the setting, which I love, like I said, I was talking to my wife about this, and she said, you know, you have all this great, like, comprehension for game mechanics and all of these other things. And, you know, you love world building and doing all of these fun and crazy elaborate things. And I like writing and I have all the software to actually edit and build a book. She said, we should do our own game.
I've got the brain, you've got the brawn. Let's make lots of money.
So we're going to, over the next short period, we're going to start brainstorming our own game.
That's going to be sweet.
Dibs, I'm in.
Well, like I said, it's in the very, very early stages. And until we get a base functional system, I think we're going to try to keep it just in house and see where things go. And yeah, because if it doesn't
work, you're literally in the same house.
I know, that's the best part about saying that. But there's I've got my group that we play with, and we're gonna, you know, run some play testing and make sure that it's at least functional as a game system. And it's going to be set up to run in certain genres to tell the stories of those genres, not so much a like true universal like GURPS game.
Cool.
Those will be more like when you say, oh, I want to play a deep exploration space game. Well, here's the things that you need to just plug in. You know, the system is going to work around those without being too bound to any one of them. So it'll be kind of universal, but it'll be more towards doing a very specific thing.
More modular of a system than a universal system.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
I like
it. And neat.
So that's kind of where I'm thinking. it's crazy, but yeah, we kind of out of the blue came up with that.
Makes sense to me. So, I say let's go for it.
You should go for it. And yeah. I want to tag along.
I want to tag along for the ride.
Well, your coattails are big enough, buddy. Probably could.
So that's what I've been up to. And a big chunk of that happened literally about 20 minutes before we started recording. So I'm like super jazzed about it. So yeah. But we're going to just slide right in here. And we, as a group, have decided that between sets, we want to do a kind of a palate cleansing for between like blocks of ideas. So like when we do a show about a whole big organizational piece or whatever.
Yeah, pretty much when we finish stuff under a certain topic umbrella, we need to stop. And this is kind of like the shaking your head to clear it so you can look somewhere else new.
Right.
Right.
And what we've decided to do is we are doing, as Null so eloquently put it, what did you call it?
A stat blockapalooza 2017 spring.
I still hate you for this.
I know.
Monster.
But it's really fun. It was actually a really fun exercise. And
writer's block.
Yeah. My last one has been kind of tough to put down. I have the idea and I know what I've got, so it's just
now. As far as our ideas go, we went ahead and decided we were each going to come up with a person, a place, a thing. To do this, though, instead of just coming up with kind of random things, we each had the challenge to come up with a theme, something to each of us had to tie one item or one person or one place to. So you're going to get a total of 9 items, 3 from each of these different styles.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Oh, yeah. And each of us, you know, we had to do a person, we had to do a monster in my case, because I don't like people. But, you know, we had to do a person, a place, and some kind of, you know, a thing, E. Mm-hmm. And here's the thing. Each of us had to come up with, like, a genre, style-ish thing. And, man, I got to admit, it's like, the stuff that we, like, our choice, that we each did, it was just like, all right, how the heck are we going to do this?
Oh, because we clearly did, like, the simple, one's fantasy, one's sci-fi, and one's horror, right?
Oh,
We didn't do anything complicated.
No,
we couldn't do that. What was your...
Mine was centered around the concept of 1950s pulp / Metroid-esque kind of deep space exploration.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So it kind of gave you like that kind of choices between, like, you know, do you want to do kind of the classic kind of comic book kind of thingy? Do you want to do kind of the more 1980s kind of video game kind of thingy? Both are available.
Yep. I actually did that one as my place.
That's my person.
And for me, that is my item.
Sweet.
Oh. All right.
So.
And Jules, what was your idea?
All right. Mine is, best way kind of describe it is the genre switch opposite universe. So pretty much you take, all right. So you'll take, you take a guy out of, let's say, modern warfare, okay? You take, like, a soldier there out of modern warfare, throw him in a big eye, small mouth. In Neat. The really goofy, campy high school drama. Pretty much, what genre are you in? Find the opposite, and then take something and put it there. That belongs in one genre, and you throw it in the other.
Okay.
Now, for me, that's my location.
That's my monster.
That's my NPC.
Cool.
Dang.
And then, my genre that I chose, which was kind of a little strange, was conspiracy theory, in either a modern setting or the Wild West.
That's my thing. That's my item.
That's also my item.
That is my location.
Nice.
This is going to be unique, guys.
So.
Yeah, I'll be honest. It took a little bit, and my stat blocks aren't as long as I usually make them.
So, I've been trying to think of what we could do to figure out which one of us to go first. So, I figure since we're a role-playing system, we should roll for it.
Oh, man.
I have a digital roller right here.
You have a digital roller?
I mean, unless you want me to, you know, to use the archaic physical dice thing.
Yeah.
Oh, fine.
Everybody we'll get a D6 out.
Okay. High roll, it's setting. Low roll, you go first.
Oh. So all in one, right?
Yep.
All right.
And we'll figure out ties in a minute. Frag. I rolled a 1.
I rolled a 3.
I rolled a 6.
All right. Genre twist it is for me. Let us begin. And of course I gave myself hard words to say, but, you know, we'll have fun with that.
Why not?
The Chronostoic Observatorium Nexus of the Central Spheres.
Dude! That's awesome. That's
a great name.
The future must be protected, and the Chrono Guard of the ancient world will protect it. Built on a future that weaves about like a wounded hydra, the guards of the Chronostoric Observatorium Nexus feel it is their duty to protect the flow of time and choices that will mold their world. Using powerful means, magical or technological, they travel beyond their time to keep outside forces and those who would meddle in the trunk of time-space from altering their futures. Their task is hard, as in their journeys they encounter advanced technologies and ways of thinking beyond what they should know. They must steel themselves to avoid partaking in these riches and returning to them into their world, lest they too corrupt the timeline. The Oath Keepers of the Central Spheres are specifically tasked with protecting against not just time, but artifacts that would meddle in the affairs of men and his children. The wonders they have seen, the truth of them, and the weird ways of the people of the future cannot come back with them. The central sphere holds the greatest vault of corrupted time artifacts, things brought back or sent back without right or reason. These oathmen take their task seriously, and any intrusion within their walls will bring previous generations forwards in time to correct the mistake. Physical trapped and present guards are not the threat against those who adventure into this central sphere. No. Their guards are their very founders. Indeed, it is their lives' work to have traveled forward to protect their citadel from those who would befoul it. The Chronostoric Observatorium Nexus of the Central Spheres is a spoof on the notion of time cops or chronopolice from the future traveling to protect the past. Those agents often must avoid the timelines they seek to preserve. The observatorium is a treasure trove of such artifacts in the future, and those who walk the halls may learn far more than they bargained for. From what may come to pass.
Nice.
Dude.
I like the idea of putting the time cop on its head.
Yeah.
I will protect the future from the past.
Yeah.
I love it. That's actually really freaking cool. Mm-hmm. Not a way I'd actually think of it implementing something like that. Nice.
Yeah. Kind of Minority Report-esque.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, but.
Yeah.
It's that future. That future, like, saving, yeah, like, I like it. That's awesome.
So, I rolled a 1. Derek, you rolled a 3.
I did. And for this one, I have my lovely NPC, who is Lieutenant Leah B., the Great White Hunter of the year 3672.
That's awesome.
Nice.
Lieutenant Leah B., the Great White Hunter, is always on the look for the very next and best thing to hunt, no matter where he's at in the entire universe. And this is a guy who actually shows up at different planets, and rather than, you know, using the latest laser rifle, like, he lands his ship on the edge of the sea because, you know, that's where a ship goes.
Mm-hmm.
And he dons his pith hat and his fighting trousers and his musket.
Dude, this is great!
And goes out and hunts because he's a trophy hunter. But so far in the future that he's hunting on other planets. He doesn't bother with his own homeworld. He's killed everything that's important there.
He's giving himself a handicap.
Yeah. Because he's so good at what he does, he has to handicap himself. Otherwise, what's the point? You know, it has to be a challenge. And he only goes alone. He does not take anyone else with him. Because these worlds can be too dangerous for normal people. But he does have his boy servant that always travels with him.
Of course.
Because he's a true gentleman.
That is oh my God, that's like the coolest thing ever, dude.
And that is Lieutenant Leaby. Oh, and by the way, he was never in any service. He just calls himself Lieutenant.
Okay, that's oh my God, that's already brilliant.
So yeah, that's where I went with my NPC.
Love it.
Okay. Mine's not. There's no way mine's that quite as awesome, but mine will never be this up. But here we go. Mine are called the Death Caps. Death Caps are sentient fungal creatures, originally from a fantasy land of sunshine, adventurers, castles, and princesses. These poor creatures mysteriously found themselves transported to Insimuth. Unfortunately, their passage was one way. They couldn't come back the way they came. Lost and utterly confused, they stayed in the area, wandering the fog-filled docks, sewers, and streets, hoping to stumble upon a way back home. Over time, the town started to corrupt and change them, bringing them sensations they never experienced before, madness, paranoia, and a constant feeling of dread. Over time, the town began to adapt to their foreign minds, slowly learning their darkest fears. It's been a while and the Death Caps are still there, still wandering the town. If you ever see them, you'll notice these little monsters really rarely run. They usually move at a moderate walking pace. But if startled or threatened, they'll either run at you or jump up and use their mushroom cap, which is surprisingly hard to bonk you. As the years have passed, the pervading madness seems to have taken them over entirely. At times, you'll see them running towards horrible things that only they can see. Other times, you'll catch them running away in abject terror. And as they pass, you hear a whisper on the wind. It's a me.
Oh, that's fun. That is fun. I want to steal these and use them in my Pathfinder game.
Oh my gosh. Well, that's the advantage of the stat blocks.
Yeah.
Yep. Take a Goomba and throw it into Call of Cthulhu.
You made toxic spirit Goombas.
Yeah, this is awesome. Like, I seriously, I'm gonna stat these things out for my Pathfinder homeworld when I start building it.
Although I'll be honest, at first, I thought you had put Smurfs into Cthulhu.
No,
but they are mushroom people as well.
That is true.
That is fun.
Yep. But I thought the ending of SMG. Perfect. I thought it's that would be cute. Scene.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Awesome. That was great.
Time for our next roll.
All right, folks, ready?
Mm-hmm.
Four.
Two.
Three.
All right. 1950s pulp.
All right. Hang on. Excuse me. All right. All right. I came up with, and this is I used the pulp setting as my location. And it's called the Diamond Rings of Rhea Prime.
Ooh.
Orbiting a triple star system, the planet Rhea Prime serves as the Sexter's resource hub. Although the planet is rich in raw materials, both inorganic and organic, the true treasure lies in the planet's stunning system of rings. You see, As three stars orbit each other, their mutual gravitational effects pull dust, high-energy particles, rocket debris, and other miasma, and slam them into each other. Over time, the gravitational forces of this strange star system pull the accretion into an orbit around the planet. These rings are a treasure trove to those who want to brave the peril. Scraps of alien technology, crystallized fuel, and even strange fossilized biomatter live in the rocks that orbit Rayet Prime. Exploration of the rings is truly dangerous. You'll need a nimble ship and an ace pilot to survive. Micrometeors, chunks of stellar diamond, and other debris that make up the rings orbit at breakneck speed. You'll need to maneuver perfectly to keep your ship's hull from being breached or your fuel tank from rupturing. But fortune favors the bold. Who knows what secrets you'll unlock in the diamond rings of Rayet Prime.
That's so cool.
That is cool.
That is pulp classic right there.
Yeah.
And get this, it wasn't spooky, scary, or anything else like that.
No, it was still good, though.
It was very good.
It doesn't have to be spooky to be good.
No, it's just that that's usually my milieu, you know?
That's true. Oh, yeah. That's true, but this was good. That was really good, hon.
Thank you. Well, here's the neat thing about it. I base it actually on an actual star system, Wolf Rayet 104. It is a triple star system that has, and it's actually producing what's called a pinwheel nebula because of all the stellar stuff that's being pushed out. And as they orbit each other, they clash and turn into this beautiful pinwheel that surrounds we can look on it right on. And it's a perfect pinwheel. It's one of the most beautiful things I've ever seen.
Oh, wow.
So I'm like, all right, what if a planet orbited a triple star system? Okay.
Cool.
And it was actually based on a real star system, Wolf Rayet 104.
That's awesome.
All right, who's next? I want to hear it.
All right, that would be me. Yay! All right. So this is an item, and it's almost catalog-esque. Because I couldn't pass it up. It sang to me. Because, you know, when you're thinking deep space 50s pulp, I'm like, what am I going to do? I got to come up with an item. Because I can't use a location because I've got a great location already. So I'm like, I got to come up with a different thing. So the item, God, what am I going to do? Meal and a pill.
Ooh, there you go.
Yeah. Classic.
For those brave space explorers, this is something you all need. Meal and a pill. While many others have dehydrated things to make them smaller, there is still the problem of rehydrating. They try to make it look like it's just a single drop and boom, you have a meal. It never works like that. And you still have to take vitamins to help. Plus, with the new meal and a pill, you never have to bring water or extra vitamins. The catalog is not responsible for any rapid expansion damage to the consumption of or having to do with any water in your system. Meal and a pill, your next meal is just a pill away.
I like. Oh, that's perfect, man.
Very nice.
That's like kind of like the old pulp, you know, sci-fi books, man.
Yeah, because you always see it like you just take a pill and you're good. And it's like, mm-hmm. You can't do that. The water that would be absorbed from your body would kill you.
It's so cool.
So I'm just like, yeah, the pill.
It fits the catalog.
And the meal and a pill is just like, yeah, it just pulls it off from your body and you still have to drink. But they're just like, we don't take any responsibility for that.
Yep. Oh, that's brilliant.
So, yeah.
Oh, I love it. All right, rounding out the set. Dr. Isaiah Grom. Born in the Deep Bend colonies of the year 2105, Dr. Isaiah Grom is considered one of the foremost leaders in xenobiology studies. Tall, dark-haired, and fair-skinned, the doctor is an embodiment of physical capabilities in space exploration. A believer in studying in the field, Dr. Grom is happy to join if any adventure group seeking the wonders of the stars. He is deeply curious about new life forms, new worlds, new ecosystems, and how they work together. Dr. Isaiah Grom is often equipped with the latest of exosuits, and unless he's spending extended downtime in the habitat or ship the players inhabit, he'll always be standing 2 to 3 feet taller as he equips his metal skin.
He dislikes weaponry but will carry a stun cannon if pressed. If forced into a corner, Dr. Gron is a man beyond his times and is a practiced pugilist and will let his fists solve his problems before he dare draws a weak gun or a knife. His backpack is always filled with sample collecting kits, observation tools, and more, most of which are wiggling or occupied by living things he's picked up along the way. Dr. Gron will always try to steer the players towards being beneficial to new life, to new life forms. He'll always assume benevolence from new intelligent life forms, although he will be cautious around animals and mobile plants. Likely hooks include attempts to protect and smuggle a specimen aboard the ship, attempts to communicate with new intelligence despite evident danger, and seeking to punish players who might have trampled on some alien plants because they just didn't notice.
That is fun. I like him.
So cool.
Mm-hmm. I like him. That's cool. All
right. Well, the last one, dude, is yours.
All right. So we need to roll for who's going to go when.
Yep. Well, you go last. So it's between me and Jules.
Oh, that's true.
So here we go. I have 6.
2.
You up.
Damn.
Yeah.
Okie dokie. Let me pull mine up. All right. Mine is, I went modern with this one, and it's called The Passport. All right.
All right.
Whoops. Sorry about that.
Is that small The Passport?
Nope. Small spasm. All
no
right.
Problem.
Okay. How is it in the age of digital information and Big Brother's all-seeing eye that all records of certain people and events are only found in hidden areas of the web, only whispered about in secure chat rooms? How are the strings so well hidden? Rumor has it that the real movers and shakers give their operatives what is colloquially known as the passport. It's coded beforehand with the operative's mission. It includes target, expected event, location, and, well, many, many other bits of data. When the operative arrives at the area and their passport is scanned, it covertly infects the checkpoint's computers with a daemon program that spreads out, infecting all networked electronics in the region. While the operative is working, all electronic records of the actions are either modified, deleted, or in some cases hyped up. How the data is manipulated depends on the daemon's original programming for that particular mission. When the operative returns and the passport is once again scanned, it transmits a self-destruct command to the daemon, causing it to erase itself and all evidence of data manipulation. At least that's what the rumors say.
Nice.
Dig.
That is fun.
You guys like?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and it totally plays into that whole conspiracy theory, like, you know, oh, the black op guy, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
That is great.
I dig.
Yeah, so the best way to do it is real-time data manipulation. So I'm like, all right, well, how can I? Ooh.
Yeah.
So yeah, that was my thing for this exercise.
Awesome.
I dig.
Thank you.
Well, my item is also the choice I made for this. And I went with the Wild West, though I guess this could work for the modern. The Final Confession. A byproduct for the search for the Philosopher's Stone and the truth of alchemy has created an excess of treated lead. This lead, now soaked in the truth of purified alchemical flame, will now imbue those with whom it is inflicted upon with the curse of truth. Seeking great opportunity with this, a maddened armorer created a mountain of ammo of what he called truth bullets, what we now know as the Final Confession. The lead of these specialty bolts will cause those struck to spew forth the truth of any question asked of them. The bolts serve as the means for getting the last bit of honesty out of criminals, spies, and thieves. But not just the lawmen use these bolts, no. The Dark Inquisition of the Dunes use them too. Bereft of their ability to speak lies, those the Inquisition hunts find absolution from their unworthiness of God's love. Quick, brutal, and effective. These rounds give no time for shadow lies, but only a deep-cutting truth of death.
That's sweet. Cool.
Sweet.
That is cool.
Mm-hmm.
I like.
Oh, yeah.
All right.
So.
Yep.
All right. So I went with the Wild West. and it's a location. The old abandoned gold mine. I have to get myself in the right frame to read this intro here, because it's good. You guys are going to love it.
I'm looking forward.
Up in them there hills, there's a gold mine that none other. That mine, though, some folks say she be haunted. Others say she's an Indian burial ground. But, you see, I know the truth. That engine part, it's almost right, but not all the way. Those Anunnaki gingins done got a burial deep in that mine. But it ain't for no engine. It's for those sky people they talk about. The last words of Samuel Aberdeen, gold prospector. Now, for the most part, they would think that the site is haunted, or have Indians been killed and sickened, the few that try to dig and pan for gold in those hills. But who is right? Most people that spend any time there get sick. The sickness is a withering illness that no doctor out there has ever been able to help people to recover from. Maybe it's an alien crash site, or maybe someone dug up a radioactive material that is for you to let those characters find out about.
Ooh.
Nice.
I like.
Well done. All right. Well done.
What I love about that is that it can start Wild West, but that can easily fit to the 50s pulp too.
Yeah. Yeah, because you got a crashed alien possibly, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it has a Gravity Falls feel to it. I like it.
Yeah, so. Well.
This is fun.
That was fun.
Yep.
And since
that block of a loser is a success.
Yeah, it really was. I had a lot of fun working on these. And for anybody else that's out there, I mean, get a couple of friends together and do something like this. Because it'll help come up with, you know, locations and people and things that you can throw into your game. So I'm now going to start doing more things like this, I think.
Cool.
To help with some of the world building that the players can help with.
And the nice thing is also, you know, you guys each, I mean, you guys know what I usually go to. So you guys put the conspiranoia, okay, that I can do. But pulp?
You did good.
The one thing is, though, you know, way back in the day before I grew up and became jaded, I went to college and I was an astronomy major. That was my saving grace because I actually know a lot about it. And I remember science of science fiction. I've done a whole bunch of stuff like that. And, you know, the history of, you know, the space exploration genre and all that stuff. So, that one was hard for me to pull off, but I'm glad I really pushed through that one.
You did great.
You did good. I think we all did really good on this one.
Damn Skippy, we all did. Holy crap.
So, yeah.
You know, I love it. It's just anything you guys do something from the catalog, I love it. It's, I don't know if you guys remember Freakazoid, the cartoon. Anubis Markets. Food so good, you can eat it. It's kind of, I love, it's like when you guys do catalog stuff. I love it.
Yeah, we need to do some more stuff with the catalog, I think. And we're going to, I need to see if I can't talk to that guy. I still haven't talked to him yet about maybe possibly doing something like artwork and statting some of these up and doing write-ups and making PDFs available for people.
Sounds good to me.
So, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
You know, the Patreon reward where people would get this regularly on the reg.
On the reg? As it were.
Yeah. So. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, go check out that Patreon thing and maybe kick a couple shekels our way. That'd be awesome. But, yeah. So, because we still only have one patron. But, hey, we love you, Eric DeMage.
You is awesome, sir.
Yeah.
Oops.
You'll meet him one day when you go to Origins.
Mm-hmm. Someday.
Yeah. Yep. So, well, I think we're just going to go ahead and just close this bad boy down, not even do shout outs or anything. I think we're just going to close it down. This was a great, great little episode. And
I had fun. A
blast. So, yeah.
Yeah, it was kind of fun, you know. And the hard part for me first was coming up with a topic, you know, like a genre type thing. It's just like, all right, you took a conspiranoia. I can't do that. Crap.
Yeah.
You know, so yeah. I'm like, what do I do? Take a genre, flop it. I'm like, okay.
Oh,
let's
just
see how
wait.
Demented.
Let's just see how wait. Demented I've already got be. My next one.
Uh-oh.
Yeah.
For the next stat block?
For the next stat block of Palooza, I've already got my next one. You're going to hate me for it, too.
Why is that?
Because it's a time frame again.
Oh, boy.
Yep. It's going to be fun.
Oh,
no
boy.
Spoilers.
No spoilers. But we will spoil something that's going to be coming up here next. We are not going to be coming right back into another regular show for Seize the GM. Instead, we've got an interview. Ooh. And that interview is going to be with Benjamin Loames, the man behind Sirenscape.
Cool.
Yeah. So we're gonna kick that one next week. And yeah, it's been a blast, guys. And we will see you all next time.
Later. Toodles.
You can contact us or the show by using Twitter, Facebook, or regular old email. Our Twitter accounts are at Zended,
at Jules Podcaster,
and at No Operations.
And the show's Twitter account is at SeizeTheGM.
And you can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/SeizeTheGM.
You can email questions or comments to the show at admin@SeizeTheGM.com.
You can email me at zended@seizethegm.com.
Me at jules@seizethegm.com.
And me at nulloperations@seizethegm.com.
Thanks for joining us for this episode of Seize the GM. Feel free to leave a comment about this episode on our webpage, www.seizethegm.com. Let the dice fall where they may, and we'll see you again next week.
Seize the GM is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial Share-Alike 4.0 International License. All copyrighted materials referenced herein are held by the respective owners. No infringement is intended, and no claim of ownership is implied.
The music for the show is Dreaming Spirit, off of the album Ghost Machine, by The Enigma TNG. His music is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-commercial, no derivatives, 3.0, unported license.